If Wisconsin was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like the flipped on its head,
sure,
what would things be made out of?
Cheese curd bushes.
Okay.
Right? So you can just pick cheese curds off the cheese curd bush.
Are cheese curds more of a fruit?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour. And part of this hour is an opportunity to highlight some of the great organizations and nonprofits and events that are happening across Wisconsin that we can learn from. And this coming Thursday, April 27th, at Turner Hall, they are kicking off Jewish American Heritage Month and Asian American Heritage Month, which is going to be taking place in May, with their Bell Phillip Forum, Fighting Anti-Semitism and Anti-Asian Hate Through Education. And it's co-sponsored by the Jewish Community Relations Council of Milwaukee Jewish Federation, the Japanese American Citizens League of Wisconsin, Elevation, and the Milwaukee Turners. And here to talk more about the event is Andrea Bernstein, who is the Associate Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council of Milwaukee Jewish Federation, Emilio Dottore, who is the Executive Director of the Milwaukee Turners, and Ron Kirimoto, who is the President of the Japanese American Citizens League Wisconsin Chapter. How was my rundown, guys?
That was amazing. Exceptional memory.
Yeah, well, yeah, I definitely wasn't reading that. So welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you all here.
Yeah, we're glad
Thanks
to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So I guess let's maybe just start with each of you giving a brief overview of what your organization does. Maybe Emilio, we'll start with you.
Sure, thanks. So I'm the executive director of the Milwaukee Turners here at lovely historic Turner Hall. This is our new building, 1882. So since about 1853, we've been committed to promoting a robust democracy through a sound mind and a sound body and our four principles of liberty, tolerance, reason, and justice. And we've been, we reincarnated the 4th Street Forum as the Bell Phillip Forum when I came on board a couple of years ago. And it's just a fantastic avenue and opportunity to share important events and strategies like the one we're discussing now, which is fighting anti-Semitism and anti-Asian hatred through education. And we get anywhere from 1,000 to 16,000 views per episode, depending. So
wow,
it's important to elevate this like that.
Absolutely. And then Andrea?
Yeah, I'm the Associate Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, and our work really focuses on building relationships between the Jewish community and other communities, for example, like the AAPI community here in Wisconsin, and helping to make sure, build understanding between communities, educate the community about anti-Semitism and help respond and prevent incidents. We do an annual incident, anti-Semitic incident audit, and that helps us to get a better understanding, a snapshot of what's happening locally, and then do events like this to help educate what we can do about that.
And then Ron?
Hi, I'm Ron Kirimoto. I'm president of the Japanese American Citizens League, Wisconsin chapter. And the Japanese American Citizens League is actually the oldest social justice civil rights national organization. It was founded in 1929, and it was one of the more surviving organizations that went through the incarceration of 125,000 Japanese Americans during World War II, and has worked a lot in a variety of different issues in modern day that parallel that around the civil rights issues. So we are the local chapter, and I'm glad to be on here. I'm going to do the. I'm actually substituting for someone, State Representative Francesca Hong, who was not offered lunch like I was. So I guess she took it. That's where I am.
Where you are. And then Elevation is also a co-sponsor, and we don't have any reps from them today because Eric Kennedy is actually going to come on later in May, but they are a collective of AAPIs in the greater Milwaukee area who strive to elevate visibility of people, businesses, and issues in the AAPI community. And so this caught my eye. I'm on the Milwaukee Turner's newsletter or email list, and it caught my eye, and I recognized some names that I know, some organizations that I know. And I think the first question, and maybe Andrew, you spoke to this a little bit in your introduction, is combining the events. Because I think, and having, you know, there's only so many months in a year, and every month is multiple national awareness something for either for health issues or heritage. And so why, instead of having two separate behemoth topics on their own, anti-Semitism and anti-Asian hate, what was the motivation to do both together?
Yeah, that's a great question. Celebrating Jewish American Heritage Month and AAPI Heritage Month together really highlights how we're all part of one community, and it's important for us to understand each other and to figure out how do we, this is a big question that we're dealing with in Wisconsin and really across the country. What do we do with the fact that we're a multiracial, multi-ethnic population, and how do we teach our kids about that? Mm-hmm. And so that's really the angle that we wanted to explore together, because we're not just concerned about teaching about Jewish American heritage. We're not just concerned about teaching AAPI heritage, but really like finding a place where everybody, all communities are reflected in our curriculum, and where kids see themselves and can also learn about people who are different from them.
Ron, do you have anything to add to that?
I think there's a lot of things that we have in common, and that's kind of how this event came together. I'm a member of Milwaukee Turners. I'm also a member of the Jewish Community Relations Council. I'm actually a member of Elevation, and I should note, none of those three organizations are members of the Japanese American Citizen.
Oh, good call out, Ron.
My right hand is a member.
But I'm not pointing anybody out, may I add. We all have something in common as concerns of different issues, as Andrea had pointed out, that are highlighted through education. And we all represent different perspectives on that, but all of us share a common interest in fighting hatred and violence that grows out of that. And education is a common bond that all communities have, we feel. And Andrea is very modest, but she is also an elected school board member, so she sees things from a variety of other perspectives as well. So,
absolutely. We are talking about the event that's happening at Milwaukee Turner's this Thursday, April 27th, their Vel Philip Forum, Fighting Anti-Semitism and Anti-Asian Hate Through Education. And so speaking of that, I guess when we talk about education, are we for this panel and for this event, are we specifically talking about like K-12 curriculum, or are we talking about the ongoing education that all of us should be doing as adults as we continue to learn about experiences and communities outside of our own?
Well, and I will defer to my colleagues. I think it's both, really. This constant onslaught. I mean, what you see happening when Congress was taking a look at TikTok and racializing all of that, and the persistent anti-Semitic and anti-Asian hate attacks, and the posturing in social media. This occurs with these symptoms in adulthood, and it's through this perpetuation of ignorance, but it's also based on the earlier forms of ignorance where our kids don't know about people that are different from them. Yeah. And if we're all part of this syncretic culture now, it's important for us to elevate things like the move to amend Act 31 is an important thing for adults. So we've got now, I don't know, for the 12th year in a row, there's AB 232 and SB 240 in front of our Assembly and our Senate. And this is to add the study of Hmong American, Asian, Native Hawaiian, Desi American studies to our curriculum. And even that is just a small step forward. So mm-hmm. I think it's both.
Emilio brings up a good point in the sense that we are hopeful that public hearings are going to start on the assembly and the Senate bills that he mentioned, which are co-sponsored by Assemblymember Francesca Hong and several other bipartisan groups of legislators. It does seem odd that when what was known as Act 31 was instituted in 1989, which directed the Department of Public Instruction to include instruction on Black Americans, African Americans, Latino Hispanic Americans, Native and Indigenous groups, Americans, but specifically omitted both Hmong and Asian Americans from that instruction on the premise that it would be added in the next session or so. Well, that was 1989. And here we are in 2023, and we're still looking at a bill that is now going to start having hearings out of the Education Committee, but probably will not get through a Republican-dominated Assembly and Senate again.
That is such a weird, unfortunate factoid as far as all of the those other communities were included. And they're like, oh, we'll get to that one next year. And then just... I did not know that was the history of how that came about. Wow, that is surprising. But then, Andrea, I know the Milwaukee Jewish Federation has been involved in trying to spread more information and teach teachers across Wisconsin to talk about the Holocaust, right?
Yeah, one of our departments at Milwaukee Jewish Federation is the Nathan and Esther Peltz Holocaust Education Resource Center, and they... have been instrumental in working with the Department of Public Instruction on resources to train teachers and provide curriculum for students to meet the Holocaust education mandate that was passed a couple years back.
So the effort is there, but sometimes not always met with as much reception as we would like. But Emilio, we actually have to go to break, but we're going to come back. All three of our guests will be here when we return. If you have any questions for them, we'd love to, if you want to text them in, 844-967-2789. When we come back, we'll talk more about the panel and the event and how you can attend either virtually or remote or more in person. But this is As Goes Wisconsin, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
To As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we are talking to the leaders of, we're talking to Andrea Bernstein from the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, Emilio Dettor from Milwaukee Turners, Ron Kurimoto from the Japanese American Citizens League Wisconsin chapter about the event taking place this Thursday, fighting anti-Semitism and anti-Asian hate through education. And Emilio, before we had to go to break, I know that you wanted to make another point, so I wanted to let you make that.
It was actually just to elevate a couple of the things Andrew was saying, there are two fantastic events coming up in May with HERC and with the Jewish Museum of Milwaukee, the first of which JACL and the Milwaukee Turners are co-sponsoring, which was a public lecture and a showing of Degenerate about Hitler's war on modern art and how he used that to weaponize anti-Semitism in the German consciousness. And then on May 24th, HERC, about whom Andrew was speaking, is partnering with the Milwaukee County Historical Society, taking a look at how the Nazis used propaganda over pints, and they used the beer halls to try to recruit folks. Hmm. And we're co-sponsoring that too. And that's another great opportunity your listeners can can come to and check out. We're actually doing it thanks to the partnership and the sponsorship of Art Heights, our board president.
The Pints one sounds specifically interesting because I was just reading about, Vice just did a piece on how there are fight clubs that are recruiting members that are like white for like white nationalism. Mm. And it's through organizations of like starting to just like work, like a workout regimen of like guys to work out with, and then how that is being used as a recruitment tool. And so history repeats itself. That's why it's important for us to learn about these
it's
things.
It's true. We do the opposite. The Turners were the first non-religious group in the state to ban Nazis as members back in 1937, 4 years before World War II.
Wow.
We have the letters they sent to President Delano Roosevelt then.
Wow, that's super interesting. So I guess I know this is kind of the core of what the event will be, so not to give away the panel, but I guess what does inclusive education look like in 2023? This is for anyone.
Inclusive education in 2023 is going to include books where students see themselves, all different students from all different identities and all different kinds of families see themselves reflected in those books. Inclusive education today really is important and essential for all students, even students who aren't part of a minority group. These are life skills that they're going to need to live in our society that is, again, as we talked about, multiracial, multi-ethnic, to learn how to be able to talk about difference in a way that's respectful and helps, build relationships.
And I don't know if any of you have firsthand experience to be able to actually talk to this, but I think the more we kind of hear about in other communities across Wisconsin, there is this pattern, trend, I don't know exactly the right word that I want to use for it, but of parents trying to get books banned or be very upset about certain curriculum, and for whether it's racially, culturally, LGBTQ. And so have you found any tactics that are good strategies to talk to people who have their guard up when it comes to diversity and inclusive education? Like, is there a way to start those conversations instead of just, I think for probably the four of us or five of us, have a knee-jerk reaction of how closed-minded they are? But that's not, I think we all know that that doesn't actually work in like changing hearts and minds. And so have any of you had any success as far as appealing to people who are more adverse to diversity?
I think one of the things that at least that I've found, I can't speak for all of us, but or my organization, but many times the movements that claim to be for parents and parents trying to do things, first of all, we're all parents. I'm sorry, Kristen, I can't speak for you, but we're all parents, and parents have a right to make decisions about their kids. When it starts to become a problem is when it moves into the public space, either in schools or libraries or other things that are for a lot of different people and a lot of different kids. Those parents do not have the right to make judgments for other people's kids, other people's parents, other individuals. And that, I think, is where the rub is. They're talking not about talking to teachers and saying, don't feel comfortable with my child attending this event or reading this book or going to this play or something like that. And that's fine, as long as it's your kid. When it crosses the line, in my opinion, is when they say, nobody's kid should go to this event or read this book or see this movie or anything else. Then that's where the more problematic.
Hands down, Ron, and I agree with that. I spent 14 years here in Wisconsin with the ACLU combating a lot of things, not the least of which was people attempting to ban and censor literature and education for the kids in public libraries and schools. And it's usually a small fringe group of folks that are trying to seize control and organizing and educating the other folks in the community who'd never thought that somebody would try to censor this or say, mm-hmm. Oh, no, learning about this type of person is bad. Is essential to that. And really, if folks want to find out more about how to link into this, they can email any of us or email us at info@milwaukeeturners.org.
Or they could go to the event on Thursday, on April 27th. 12 noon, Fighting Anti-Semitism and Anti-Asian Hate Through Education. I will link all of this information to our show notes for today. But I will be on air while it airs, so I'll have to watch the replay. But thank you so much to all three of you for spending time with us today. And I have no doubt this will be a super interesting conversation that you have on Thursday.
We're looking forward to it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. We're going to take a break and be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madden-Air. And sobriety, sober curious, just drinking less, all of those things are on the rise. In fact, the no alcohol drinks market surpassed $11 billion in 2022.
Holy cow. Wow.
Yeah, which is up. Yeah, which is up from $8 billion in 2018. And a part of the, you know, part of that market, obviously some is the actual packaged NA drinks and NA beer and NA wine. But it's also establishments. It's also bars and bars like Inoxicated, which is in Racine. And here to tell us more about that bar and the NA scene there is Inoxicated's manager, Jeff Gustin. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good. And so how long have you been working at Inoxicated? I guess, how long have you guys been open?
Well, we've been open a year and a half.
Okay, so still pretty new.
Yeah, we're the new kids on the block, but we're growing fast.
And so what is the scene like? Like, what is, like, kind of paint a picture of what a night out at Inoxicated as a place that does not serve any alcohol, but also serves many other alcohol-adjacent fun mocktails. Yeah. What does an average night look like?
It looks just like any other typical bar in Wisconsin, except everybody's sober. I've bartended on and off my whole life, so we basically recreated your typical Wisconsin corner bar. We just left the alcohol out. Used all different alternatives and recreate the classic drinks by taste. You know, so people that don't want to drink or are living a sober lifestyle can have their nightlife back without alcohol interfering in it.
Jeff, I just think the whole thing is so great. I really do. This is certainly something we've talked about before on this show. The growing number of places, growing number of people. It's national headlines all the time about how much Wisconsinites drink. So it's really, it's really wonderful to see these alternatives popping up and for people to still have a place to go and have fun instead of, you mean you're not going to have a drink?
Yeah. What do you mean? Never get questioned here.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a terrible question though. And it's like, what do you mean you're not going to have a drink? What? Cause I'm guilty of something if I'm not imbibing.
That's the way they make you feel, especially here in Wisconsin. And because of that, a lot of people that, you know, are living a sober lifestyle, they just don't go out. Yeah. Every event in Wisconsin seems to be centered around alcohol or have alcohol present. So somebody that's battling an addiction, they have no place to go. And we're not just geared towards people in addiction. We're geared towards everybody that doesn't want to have a drink this particular day. It's just going over very well. And the more people that find us, the more people that come out. And we do, like I said, everything you would see in a bar, we have here. I don't know if you can see too well behind me. That's my back bar.
Yeah.
Alcohol-free alternatives that we make our cocktails with.
So I guess that's my next question, because I feel like NA beer has come a very long way. There are so many different options that are really, really good. I've not ventured into NA wine. I have tried one NA bourbon alternative that maybe I just need to mix it with the right mixers, but I was not impressed with that one. So as far as what has been like in the market of NA alternatives, is it some that are specifically supposed to taste like booze but aren't boozy, or is it just kind of in the mocktail, like it's about mixing the right ingredients together to kind of replicate that?
With the alternatives, they're not made to be drank alone. They have to be mixed to come to life. We do have a whiskey or a bourbon alternative that I can drink straight on ice.
Wait, what's the name of that one?
Spiritless Kentucky 74.
Okay.
There's a trick to that, because there's a product called Disco Inferno that you put two drops in your drink, and it doesn't change the taste, but it gives you that sensation that you just had a drink.
Oh.
That kind of really brought it up to the next level. But even with that, most of the alternatives, you can taste where they're trying to go, but once you mix them is when they come to life.
So what are some of the, like, what are the more popular mocktails that you guys make?
So one of our biggest ones is, we're in Wisconsin, so you had to have an old-fashioned.
Yep.
And we do ours with a whiskey alternative, and we use a smoke top and a torch, and we smoke it with oak wood. So it gives it that aged barrel sense of taste when you smell the oak when you come up to take a drink. One of our other best-selling ones is a White Russian. It's made with cold brew coffee, a vanilla vodka alternative, and Irish cream. And I have one of those almost every day. They're phenomenal.
just call you the sober Big Lebowski.
Exactly. we currently got about 20 mocktails on our menu, and we can just about duplicate any drink. If you came in and ordered your favorite alcohol version drink, I would tell you if I can make it so that it'll taste right or not. You know, the last thing I want to do is give you something that doesn't taste right.
Jeff, has the alcohol-free wine, is that getting any better? Because I did try some a couple of years ago, and I was not impressed.
See, I was never a wine person. I didn't like it all along. And I don't like the alcohol-free wine because it tastes like wine. We have a couple wines that are really good sellers. I've actually had a customer get teared up because she thought she would never taste red wine again.
Oh.
So the people that like wine, there is a good substitute out there, and they don't just taste like juice anymore. They have that wine taste. And part of the reason is because a lot of them are de-alkalizing wine that's already made. So they go through all the steps of making the wine, and they pull all the alcohol back out and just leave you with the flavor.
We're talking to Jeff Gustin, who's the manager at Inmoxicated, which is in Racine, and it is a no-alcohol bar. And so you said that on and off for your adult life, you've been a bartender. So were you a mixologist, like specifically crafting cocktails that did have alcohol in them before you were here?
I called myself a bartender, and until I started here, I just served drinks.
Okay.
I worked at your typical Wisconsin bars. I poured whiskey and Coke into a glass and said I was a bartender. I didn't become a bartender until we opened here and we started designing and coming up with our own drinks from scratch and really putting that extra effort into it. All of our drinks are measured per the recipe. They're all fully garnished the way they should be. Alcohol's not the entertainment. So they're coming here for a good experience all the way through. And it's pretty rewarding when you come up with a brand new drink that nobody else has and your customer tells you how good it is.
Yeah, I would imagine. And so I guess, so there's that part of it, but you said that in the beginning that the bar, you know, it's looks like a bar, there's trivia nights, there's all the fun, but I have to imagine bar time looks a little different.
Yes. We close that. I never knew bartending could be this good.
Wow.
Somebody spills a drink, it's legitimately an accident. We've never had an argument. The bathrooms are clean at the end of the night. And people that aren't alcohol driven, We go home early. I mean, we close at 10 o'clock.
I was going to ask, how late are you guys open?
We close at 10 o'clock because our customer base does go home early. And yeah. We're not one of those places. We don't want to be a stop for people to try to come in here and sober up. If we suspect somebody's been drinking, we'll ask them to leave. You have to be sober to be here. We're alcohol free, and we don't want the alcohol problems to come in after somebody has fueled up somewhere else, so to speak.
And I have to think too, Jeff, that for young single women or for any single woman, it's got to be a lot easier to go into a bar that doesn't serve alcohol if you just want to have a drink and a conversation without getting drooled over, or right?
I've heard that, how nice it is not having to worry about that.
Some drunk schmuck and, you know, you got to fend him off. And I just think it just sounds like a pleasant experience all the way around. I assume you have bar dice. It is Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. Funny story with the bar dice. We had a group of ladies in here shooting pool. A group of guys came in, and the guy sitting at the bar says, I'm going to go introduce myself. I'm like, oh, no. Yeah. All my past is coming out. I can see it. I have never seen a more respectful introduction. They all shot pool for a while. Then they came back to the bar and sat down and shot bar dice. They got halfway through the first round, and one of the ladies stops and goes, what are we playing for?
I was just going to ask my question.
Well, you know what they did? They played for shots just like they used to. And they had a blast, and they played for a good hour straight. But, we don't have the problems you see in traditional bars. And I'm not saying all bars have problems, but there's always that alcohol-driven potential, and we just don't see that here.
And it's so funny that it's, you know, baked into our – and I've lived in a lot of different places, and this is everywhere, that's like a drinking bar culture where you kind of get a – you know, you get a jail out of free card unless you're actually in jail for something you did while drunk. But, you know, it's like we excuse behavior – that if sober, we would never tolerate, of like trashing a bathroom, spilling drinks, starting a fight. But for some reason, when there's alcohol involved, we're like, well, they were drunk. And we just kind of excuse it. And so it's so fascinating to hear that this is the best bartending job you've had, because there's just so many less issues you have to deal with and, you know, people problems.
Yeah, like I said, I never knew it could be this good.
And so for you, what was the motivation? Were you skeptical at all as far as leaving a traditional bar to go do this?
I worked on and off at different bars, so I didn't leave a bar to come here. Shannon Goodman, who's the owner, we're actually engaged. So we're doing this as a partnership, and because I had the experience, I just apply it here. It's pretty much the same concept. It's just a little bit different, you know, as far as events and trying to read people, because they're not alcohol driven. But you know, it just seemed like the right thing. She quit drinking. Today is actually her 2-year anniversary from not drinking. So I got everything all decorated, and we're having a big party tonight.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, that's incredible. That's said. Well, congratulations both on the engagement and to her. And I'm so happy to hear, I mean, a year and a half, especially a new concept coming out of COVID had to be intimidating as far as like, how is this going to stick? And so to hear that you guys, people like it and people are showing up is so encouraging to hear, as far as I think there's just a lot more people who are, even if they're not giving up drinking entirely, wanting the option to not feel pressured to have to drink all the time.
Yeah, we've seen everything. You can come and sit here and sit next to somebody that's been sober for 30 years, and the person on the other side is going to a traditional bar after he has a couple drinks here. He's starting his night here. So we have every walk of life, every age. You know, it's just like walking into a bar.
And that is a good question, though. Is it any age? So can kids go in?
We were 21 and up, but we changed it to 18 and up. So we wanted to give them, you know, a chance to see what's out there without having to experience the alcohol. And it's such a growing trend that, you know, especially the younger kids, they're not drinking like we used to. Yeah. Like I used to.
And that's I used to either.
that's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Janie, do you have a question?
again, I just, what are some of the other things that you're hearing from customers, Jeff? It just sounds like such an oasis for people who are still social and want to be sociable. And again, without all of that pressure of what's wrong with you, you're not drinking. So what have some of your customers said?
We've had very grateful customers. Some are finally, you know, they're so thrilled to finally get their nightlife back, have something to go out and do without running the risk of slipping up and having alcohol. We've had people tell us they wouldn't still be sober if we weren't here. You know, they have a bad day at work, old habits, we're going to a traditional bar. He has his old habit back. He comes here and has a beer, but it's not an alcohol beer. So he's not slipping up, but he's still getting his frustration out and winding his day down, you know, by his old habits, just a healthier way.
Well, this is awesome. Jane, we have to go down. We'll make a trip down to Racine and come visit you guys and have one of those old fashioned. But Jeff Gustin, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. This is As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And this is another day that's just flown by.
It really has. Jeff was great. That was so much fun. And it's so encouraging.
It is really encouraging. And now I'm trying to think. There's a new one in Wausau, too. I feel like I was listening to Bullfall Radio this morning. And we had a commercial running on the radio station that was a new alcohol-free bar up there. And now the name of the location is escaping me. But not that I have plans to become sober anytime soon, but I've been cutting back drinking. And it's like, it's interesting to think of how much being around people who drink makes you want to drink.
Definitely.
Because, you know, it's also just sometimes being the only sober one at the end of the night. You're like, yeah, I'm going to go home. Like I've had this experience and then had to be like, oh, I'm also the person who sometimes is so drunk that I think I'm making sense. And the person I'm talking to who's also drunk thinks I make sense. But then if you're the sober person in that conversation, you're like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, how are you following each other's conversation? Neither of you make any sense right now.
Different plane of logic or illogic, as it were.
But it's like the fact that they can talk to each other and they get it. And yet the sober one is like, I am not following you right now.
Yeah. Which just indicates what it does to your brain. I mean, seriously, it definitely alters you. So I'm just delighted to hear of Inmoxicated success. And as you said, there are some others growing around the state, and that's great. And it would be great too if the younger generation coming up will not only vote more regularly than my generation did, but they will drink less than my generation did.
But that's interesting. So if your generation was not voting much, was it just apathy? Like post Vietnam War, there was just a generation of why would I vote? Why does it matter?
Life's pretty good. Life's pretty good, you know? And if you weren't fired up by the Equal Rights Amendment or women's issues, I think it was a lot easier just to let things go. And that that apathy of, it's not going to affect me. You know, it's not going to, whoever I vote for, the outcome is not going to change my life or affect my life very much.
Well, it's also interesting to think if it was, you know, like things just didn't seem that bad. Or if like everything was just kind of like, well, it's fine. Versus, I don't know, when you could probably attribute it to a lot of different things, whether it's a 24-hour news cycle or social media, of just more information and more entities out there, whether purposefully trying to scare you or just the reality of
this is what it is,
certain facts scaring you into action, versus maybe what it was like in the 70s? Because I don't, at the top of my head, I can't remember the charts as kind of the ebbs and flows of 18 to 25 or 21 to 27, right? Like the youngest voting age of what, how much people were voting. But right now people are fired up, which
is great. It is great. And I think they are in, they are becoming more informed and not just voting for the D or the R, but actually finding out what the candidate behind that letter stands for.
Yeah. And well, and truly they, we make it so easy now, as far as it's just at your fingertips, which is also interesting because then I feel like the push to limit kids' social media use, which I think there are some good arguments for it because there's plenty of evidence that shows how detrimental it can be to their mental health. And yet it is also a tool for them to get a lot of information and be the most informed generation we've ever had, right? Of coming out of high school is just how much they know. That certainly when I was in high school, like I, you know, I had to write one really long paper in high school and I wrote it on Queen Elizabeth I. And that was like checking books out. This was in high school. And like, you could look up some information online, but
you still had to
mostly
go to
it was, I was checking books out about Queen Elizabeth and citing, like I had a bunch of book, you know, like the little post-it notes of like, this is where I'm going to come back and I'm going to rewrite this and blah, blah. But then if that would have been 2002, by 2000, 10 years later, when I was writing my thesis, I don't think I checked a single book out.
Different world. Right?
Like, just I think
a completely
it was all
different world. Yeah.
JSTOR.org of written like papers and research that have been published, but I could download as a PDF and copy and paste into, you know, collect my quotes, recite them, quote them. But in such a short period of time of just like how easy it was. And now it's even easier.
Yeah.
I'd imagine.
Definitely.
So, all right. Well, that was a fun. That was a very fun show. But tomorrow, Greg Bach will be back. And we're actually going to talk to a journalist who is a free, she's a freelance journalist, and she wrote an article for Cap Times about a underground sharing economy that's happening in Madison. We're like, no money needed, no tender exchanged. It is all trade.
Really?
Yeah. So that's going to be tomorrow at 1. And I think that's going to be super interesting to see what she learned. She was researching for that article.
So it's a barter economy.
It's a barter economy. Of course, it's happening in Madison.
Well, naturally.
But yeah. So I'm excited about that. But then coming up next, obviously, you got Luke and Brian for Dueling Tangents. You got Chad Holmes on Bull Falls Radio. So stay tuned for that. And then at 4 o'clock at 2 o'clock, you have Matt Flynn. Then 4 o'clock, you got
Dominic and Jim Santel today.
Jim Santel.
Yes.
All right.
Yes,
so that'll be interesting. Jim Santel, because Crude is still gone for now. But stick around on Civic Media and always come back tomorrow when we'll do this all again. But thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. Thank you for listening. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.